يقولون سلام سلام ولا هنا سلام.
You're listening to Middle East Analysis, a podcast series taking a close look at the Middle East, North Africa region. It's Middle East Analysis. It's also Advent, which I think is very timely because we're not going to go to Iraq. We're not going to go to Syria. We're not going to go to Libya. Not going to go to Egypt, North Africa. We could, and we have many times over this year, but we're not going to do that today. We are going to look at the Holy Land, and we're going to do so with Dr. Harry Hagopian, our regular studio guest. And I'm not going to say he looks tired. He'd probably say he does, but I'm not going to say that because I keep saying that. So, Harry, you look wonderful. How are you?
Oh, I look wonderful and I feel wonderful, James. And it's a pleasure to be here for this final podcast for 2014, where hopefully we will reminisce a bit on what happened in those lands and how those events impact us.
Yeah, absolutely, because, you know, we could talk about Iraq and Syria. It's on the agenda. It's been on the
agenda.
You
keep telling me Iraq and Syria. You mentioned a lot of countries there. Yeah. By the way, you didn't mention Lebanon. But
no,
the one country
true.
That you didn't mention, which to me is key for the Middle East, North Africa, is Tunisia.
Yes.
Because Tunisia is a success story, and I have been talking about Tunisia quite a bit recently. So maybe in the new year, once they have had their presidential elections in the second round, and once we know who is president, now that we know what parliament looks like, we can talk a little bit about Tunisia and why is Tunisia different from many other places in the MENA region where they're still struggling with the changes that have come in since 4 years ago.
Now, you know, phrases come into being at certain times. I hadn't really heard of bucket list. That's something I heard of through 2014. We'll talk a bit about 2014, but my bucket list for Middle East Analysis 2015, I think, yes, Tunisia would be up there. Maybe Algeria, some of the North African countries that we haven't touched upon. Morocco, I don't really often talk to you about. I'm fairly ignorant where I should know more.
And we had Canon Bill Schwartz here
yes.
talking about Qatar, and the Gulf is something that we should also address somehow.
Always steal my thunder. That was on the bucket list. Yes, listeners, I'd love to do that. I'd love to do...
Not today, though, James.
No, not today. Let's look to the land of Christ, his birth, ministry, passion, death. It's what we're all about in many ways.
Why did you stop after death?
I should have said resurrection.
Yeah, there you go.
Yes, quite right to point that out. I would have got there. I think I'm a little bit slow today. Why don't we talk about that region? You have many personal memories. Our listeners must, of course, by now know that you lived in Jerusalem for a great many years.
You've True.
Reflected some nice stuff about this wonderful season of Advent moving on into Christmas for us. We eternally talk about your role back in the 90s with Israel-Palestine and how closely involved you were. And we lament the fact that not a huge amount of progress has been made in the last 20
years. I like the way
years.
You say we eternally talk about your role in the 90s. First of all, it makes me look like a geriatric. And secondly...
An experienced one.
And secondly, it's almost like I had my heyday in the 90s and now you can sit, have your hot chocolate and talk about the good old days.
Now, maybe you've distanced yourself from a really dubious political situation, Harry. I don't know. No, but I mean, on a serious note, we'd like to see more progress, wouldn't we? We've always said that there... With the two-state solution, if there's the correct will on both sides, then a form of peace or stability should be achievable. I mean, that's idealistic.
That's wonderful. You are now paraphrasing what I often say is my mantra, which is with goodwill and good faith, the Israeli-Palestinian conflict could be resolved. But at the moment, the political leadership does not have neither the goodwill nor the good faith.
No, very sadly. But we have had some key visits to the region over the last 12 months, looking
that's
at
true
the Holy
too.
Father, Pope Francis, visited the Holy Land in rather a historic way, echoing back to the
1964.
Meeting. Yes, the meeting between the Patriarch of Constantinople of the time, Athenagoras.
Not bad for somebody Ooh. Who's got Cypriot genes. You Ooh. Half managed that, Athenagoras.
Yes, damning me with faint praise. And, of course, Pope Paul VI. I mean, there were echoes of that when Pope Francis went, I think, 24th to 26th of May. We're looking half a year ago for that.
Absolutely. And since then, of course, he's been in Turkey, which also has its impact on the MENA region, because he did not go to Turkey simply because he wanted to see this country that overlaps Europe and Asia. He went there because of the increased radicalism and the ISIS phenomenon, which I call Daesh, and also because he wanted to meet once more the new, well, when I say new, not so new, but the current incumbent ecumenical patriarch Bartholomew I, because he and Pope Francis have struck up a very nice friendship. They're very fond of each other. They keep hugging and kissing each other. And in a sense, I think this is good because a lot of the reservations that the Orthodox and the Catholic as apostolic churches have are because of those human issues that impacted the schism. So in a sense, having those two people show so much openness and friendship to each other means that it pretty much helps move toward what John Paul II used to say, the two lungs of Christianity, Orthodox on one hand, Catholic on the other.
Now, it is that time of year where perhaps looking for unity in the body of Christ is absolutely appropriate. And Pope Francis, we always talked about Pope Emeritus Benedict, didn't we? Wanting very strongly to reunite the Orthodox and the Catholics. But Pope Francis, with this relationship, amongst other things, appears to have taken that on.
He has taken it on, and he's doing it slightly differently. He's South American. He does not have any European background to him. So in a sense, he looks at this differently. And I think when people talk about unity, I always am careful because I can't suddenly see all those different churches, and there are so many different churches. You talk about all the Orthodox denominations, you talk about the Catholics, and it's not only the Roman Catholic Church. There are so many Catholic churches of the East in the MENA region. Then, of course, if you add onto those the Anglican and other Reformed churches, if you add to it the Afro-Caribbean churches, the Evangelical churches, can you imagine how many offshoots we have? You can't bring all these back into one crucible and say, here we have unity, one person, one voice. But what we can do is, instead of unity in uniformity, which is, in my opinion, not workable at this stage at least, it's unity in diversity. We retain our richness, our heritage, our history, our affiliations, but at the same time, we work more together. And for me, ecumenism is not a question of speaking in one voice for everybody, but trying to bring all those rich resources together in the service of Christ and in the service of our faith.
Well, we had the General Secretary of the Middle East Council of Churches, didn't we, with us on our last podcast.
We did that too.
Father Michel Gelak. Now, he talked quite well, I thought, about both ecumenism, our brothers and sisters in Christ, but also about Islam, which does dominate as well. But let's move away from the Holy Land just for one second, because I wanted to ask you about the Pope's second visit, which wasn't that long ago, actually, 28th to 30th of November to Turkey. I was quite surprised that happened with everything that's going on with ISIS and Kobane and everything on the border.
Well, it happened because of ISIS and Kobane rather than in spite of James. He went there, as I said, because there is a lot of fear in some of those communities, certainly the Christian communities in the MENA region, about what this ISIS or Daesh phenomenon is doing to not only Christians, but Yazidis, Kurds, and a lot of other people, and incidentally, also to Muslims. So in a sense, he went there to remind people of the support and the solidarity he brings with him to those communities, starting, of course, with his own community, the Christian communities. And therefore, that, I thought, was essential. But what is equally essential, and let us decrypt a little bit this myth we have where everybody thinks that anything to do with Islam or with Muslims is terrorist. It is not. 80% of the people who are victims of the ISIS-Daesh terror are actually Muslims. They're not Christians or other minorities. So the Muslims are also suffering as much as anybody else. It is there that I think we should actually stop for 1 minute and think that this phenomenon called ISIS-Daesh does not represent Islam as we understand it or as we dialogue with. This is basically something that is more extreme, more radical, and in that sense, we have to differentiate between the chaff and the wheat.
I'm going to ask you a bit of a controversial question.
Go ahead. But we are you do realize you started saying this is an Advent podcast, and you told me, Harry, 15 minutes, and then you're out.
That's because I get.
And now you're talking to me about things that have nothing to do with Advent.
Right. think we should either switch chairs or I should pipe down. Okay, let me refocus slightly. I will refocus and say that if you consider January 2014, almost a year ago,
yeah.
We started the year with our international work in the Holy Land, with the Holy Land Coordination.
We did.
Which we've told people a number of times is, if you like, the mandate from the Holy See has been for the Bishops' Conference to organise what we call the Holy Land Coordination. It's kind of like an international meeting of bishops.
You've got French bishops, you've got Spanish bishops, you've got South Africans, you've got all sorts of bishops from across the world coming together, and not only bishops. I mean, let's be very clear about this. Bishops do not have a monopoly.
Quite.
There are priests and there are lay people, and for me, the lay people are very important. Let's not forget the soldiers just because we are fond of the generals. In a sense, all these come together under the rubric of the Holy Land Coordination to go once a year, every January, to the Holy Land, to Israel, Palestine, and sometimes to Jordan, in order to speak with the people there, get to know the situation, the communities, the various Christian communities, but also the Muslim and Jewish communities, in order to try and understand where we're going with the situation there. Is there any possibility for peace in the Holy Land? And yes, we had one last year, and as you well know, we are now in the throes of preparing the new one for next month, January 2015.
But you know, I saw the pictures of Gaza back in January 2014 and thought, wow, it's a lot of rubble. It looks battered into submission. And then, of course, it actually was battered into submission halfway through the year.
Absolutely.
And bookending the year, if you like, Cardinal Nichols was out in Gaza, again, a matter of weeks ago,
mm-hmm.
alongside the people, alongside the devastation. And I just, it kind of blew me away, actually, looking at the two sets of pictures, because I didn't think it could get any worse than last January. But then, you know, it can.
It did get worse. And of course, the people who suffer the consequences of such wars and conflicts are the ordinary people, ordinary men, women and children. And in a sense, yes, if you actually take the photos that your colleague took of Gaza in January and then the ones that were taken when Cardinal Vincent Nichols was there a few weeks ago, and you compare them, you see how much backward Gaza has gone in terms of destruction, in terms of breakdown of the infrastructures, etc., etc. Gaza is very, very difficult, but it is also part of the Holy Land as we understand it. And let us not forget that there is a very tiny Christian community, Orthodox and Catholic, living in Gaza, and its voice is far, far louder than its size, and in a way, it's very central to some of the humanitarian work that is going on in Gaza. I'll give you an example. You mentioned Father Michel Gelach, the General Secretary of the Middle East Council of Churches, who was sitting here next to me only a month ago. The MECC have a huge humanitarian relief work going on in Gaza, which is probably the second largest in the region. So in a sense, a lot is happening there. And this is why when we look at the Holy Land and when we look at Advent and when we think of Christmas and the New Year, we should sort of broaden our scope a little bit, our lens, and not only think in terms of one building in Bethlehem and be happy singing, "O Little Town of Bethlehem."
But sometimes, even when we do that, I don't think we actually think about the region. I, for instance, have been to two nativities so far this week. I've been to a carol service for persecuted Christians in Iraq and Syria. And, you know, you try very hard to think about what lies behind the, you know, the beautiful music and what lies behind the, you know, the wonderful interpretations of the children. But it's hard, isn't it, sometimes to actually genuinely think about what lies behind our sort of Western.
Of course, it's different and difficult because you've got a prism, I've got a prism, we've got our own lenses through which we see ourselves, let alone others and the regions abroad. But in a sense, you're right. A lot of the people who sing those Christmas carols, I just wonder if they pause for a minute to think about where did the events that led to those carols, where did they actually take place? Do they realize that these are things that happened in Bethlehem, in Jerusalem, in Nazareth, in Syria, in Lebanon, in Iraq, in Egypt, all these places? We talk about refugees all the time. We tend to sometimes forget that the Holy Family at some stage in their life were refugees.
Mm.
So in a sense, all this is part and parcel of what I call Advent. Because what is Advent? Advent for me, a non-theologian, a layperson, is a time of preparation, anticipation, and thought. If I don't do that, if I don't think about what is coming ahead and what is there on Christmas Day and what does that miracle mean in my life and to those around me, then I'm not really getting very far. It's not just a question of going, being happy to go to church on Christmas Day and coming out and feeling all glib about it. That's not Christmas for me.
Well, I am going to ask, actually, what Christmas is for you and what it will be this year. Give us a few personal reflections, but let's not do that until you're one of the few people I know that I can actually talk to about the realities in Israel-Palestine and understand what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are two things it strikes me.
I'll take that as a compliment.
Please, please do. You know, there's clearly the general election in Israel next year, 17th of March.
It is.
I believe. Now, that surely is a pivotal event.
That's a huge event, and it will be a decisive one, in my opinion. I know we always say that general elections, which are basically parliamentary elections, which choose the next government in Israel, we always say that each election is critical.
Mm.
But this one is really critical because we're talking about two different orientations in the country, one leading us away from any resolution of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, and the other one hopefully leading us into a resolution of some of the issues affecting the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. And really, I mean, all the violence, all the suffering that is going there is unacceptable. And I say this all the time, and a lot of the political observers confirm my feeling that the Israeli-Palestinian conflict is at the very hub of everything that is happening in the whole MENA region. So when you talk about all the other uprisings, when you talk about all the other issues that are happening in that part of the world, it doesn't mean that we've forgotten the Palestinian issue, because funnily enough, despite all the suffering, all the problems of people from Egypt to Libya to Tunisia to Lebanon to Syria to Iraq to Yemen, you name it, it's there, Jordan, the Palestinian issue is always one that flares up. I'll give you an example. Palestinian minister without portfolio, Ziad Abu Ain, was killed a couple of days ago. And I will use killed between inverted commas because I'm a lawyer and I want to say I do not want to precede any final result. But that's what everybody is talking about. He was out there in a place called Turmus Aya. Turmus Aya has a folkloric song in Arabic.
Hmm.
And I remember when I was a wee kid, I could hear people singing it. And it is pretty much a few miles away from Ramallah, which a lot of the people in the Holy Land coordination know about, because that's part of the places where they go. And Ramallah is where Mahmoud Abbas and the Palestinian Authority have their base, their headquarters.
Yeah.
He was out there with a group of people protesting the settlements that are taking place. They're not even settlements. They were protesting against what is known as an outpost, which is different from a settlement in the sense that most of the settlements on Palestinian territory have been approved by the Israeli governments successively. These are outposts that even the Israeli government doesn't approve of, and yet they are there. There'll be a few shacks that come and suddenly spring up in the middle of some land or other. And of course, it affects the Palestinian farmers, the agriculture, the olive trees, etc., etc. So these people were there with this minister who's responsible for settlements, protesting against what is happening there. There was a bit of a fracas, a fight. I don't know what happened. I don't want to go into the practicalities of it. And he died. He literally died.
Mm.
And therefore, the whole of the MENA region, the whole Arab world, was on the satellite channels, not talking about the uprisings and the killings in Syria or in Iraq or in Libya or elsewhere. They were talking about this Palestinian man who had died as a result of a long and festering Israeli-Palestinian conflict. What does this mean? This only means one thing. Israel-Palestine grabbed the political imagination of a lot of people. And you want to counter radicalism, you want to counter some of the nefarious issues that basically impact the whole region, you have to address the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. And all this shilly-shallying and all those cosmetic political statements and all these air miles that are deployed right, left, and center have absolutely nothing to do with the resolution of the conflict. This has to come through a robust goodwill, good faith approach. And all this verbiage that is coming out of should the European EU parliaments recognize Palestine as a state or not? Should the United Nations Security Council adopt a plan to be submitted by the Palestinians which asks for a finite plan to resolve the issue? All these are very, very important. I have been taught for all those years when, as you say, you took me back to the 1990s when I've been dabbling with Israeli-Palestinian politics before I became much more regional in my work. I've always known and I've always felt that what needs to be done is to address Israel-Palestine, two states next to each other, living in security, in full sovereignty and in contiguity. That happens fine. Anybody who tries to do anything else, the violence will continue.
Now, I don't want to get told off by you again, so we're going to stick with Advent and Christmas. I'm not going to say to you, well, what would a new Israeli government need to constitute of in order to make progress? But I will be bringing that up early in 2015. So there's a bit of, that's probably the most notice I've given you on a question.
I'll renegotiate my pay scale for that.
Oh, it's going to have to be three bags of crisps, listeners. No, you're priceless, Harry, I must say. I'll leave that to other people to discuss. But can we finish with your
personal
reflections?
When I was a kid, you said priceless, and I smiled because when I was a kid, I remember we were in class one day and somebody wanted to show off his English. English was never our first language. So he wanted to say priceless, and he said valueless. And he got a lecture from the English language teacher about the difference between priceless and valueless. And unfortunately, sometimes we lose the difference in our own lives between priceless and valueless. We lose it in our faith issues as much as in our daily reality, family, friends, acquaintances, circles as well. That was my little bit of philosophy thrown in for free.
I was going to say, because you you bandied around that, well, I don't know what Advent is, and then proceeded to give me what I consider to be quite a nice
look. It's the Christmas podcast, so you can see me smiling more, being a little bit more lighthearted, because I don't want us to go down the road of a very grim analysis of what's happening in that region today. Not today, when we're supposed to be celebrating in about a week, 10 days' time, the beginning of a major earthquake in our lives.
Well, for sure. Well, let's hope that it's a positive one. Just finish for us, Harry, with your own personal reflections. What are you doing for Christmas? How are you going to celebrate the birth of Christ?
I'm going to have roasted chestnuts.
Oh, very nice. Where? In the region?
In the region.
Oh, very good. Because I remember we've talked before about...
I love roasted chestnuts. When I was a wee kid and I was growing up, and when I say wee kid, I mean wee kid, because I was really in basically shorts at the time. I remember for us, one of the memories I have of Christmas, because it's winter, it's cold, we had a wooden stove in the house. A very big, nice wooden stove. I love the smell of wooden stoves. Mm. It's very different from gas or oil or heaters or convection heaters or central heating. Things have moved forward by moving backward. But in a sense, we had that huge stove which had a big hot plate on top. And what we used to do is we used to roast chestnuts, eat chestnuts, have tea with mint, and also sometimes roast marshmallows and eat. And that used to be a treat, because marshmallows at the time was not a very well-known commodity in that part of the world. So for me, when I smell chestnuts, roasted chestnuts, I always associated with Santa Claus.
Do you remember going to the Church of the Nativity?
Yes, I do, but we'll do that in 2016 or 15. You said you want this to be short.
I know, but I like talking to you, Harry. I like talking to you. I don't want to bore everyone to death, but
Church
it's
of
nice.
Nativity is very nice. It's there are lots and lots of stories, personal stories about the Church of the Nativity, about my experiences, my adventures in the Holy Land, outside the Holy Land, in the region, outside the region. You know, everybody is telling me, Harry, why don't you write your memoirs? And I said to myself, I will write my memoirs either when I think it's going to be such a success that I'll make some money, or when I have enough money to sit down and write my memoirs. Since I don't believe either is true, at the moment I'm not writing my memoirs.
Yeah, but I should share with our listeners, actually, that I've been badgering you a little bit to give us some more personal Mina reflections.
You did badger me a bit today to give you some personal reflections.
But I mean in a more structured, regular audio fashion. I want to do a bit of a Mina coffee shop with you, where you sit down with me.
Okay.
Very conversational, very personal. Sharing just, you know, a few of those little intimate details, the sort of relationships you've had with certain people politically and in terms of your work in the Middle East, what you can tell us, of course.
Faith-centered,
exactly. Because you introduced me to a load of people. We've talked about many of your experiences over the years. I've pulled your leg a bit about the early 90s, middle 90s and what you were doing there with Israel-Palestine. But you have a wealth of experience, and I think that that would actually be really interesting.
You know, part of the culture of the Middle East, North Africa, something that we have lost in the West to a large extent as we have pushed this agenda for individualism, is what is known as society. I don't know if the word society still rings any bells with you, James, but society is not only people living in a certain landmass. Society is also people coming together, having chats, discussing, mooting, debating. And a lot of that happens in the Middle East. It usually happens over a game of when people have backgammon or any kind of games with a cup of tea, with a hubble bubble or a shisha, and then they start talking about old stuff and they start pontificating about new stuff. This is part of what is known as the bazaar mentality of the Middle East, North Africa. I know you've been once to Iran. Iran is very famous for that, as are other countries. In Iraq, there are streets where you have coffee shops and bookstores, and this was very much a part and parcel of Iraqi culture as well as other countries as well. And out of this came in the olden days, very, very much in the early days of Islam, something called as Souq Ukaz, which basically are people coming together and just talking and discussing and debating and reminiscing about old stories and souvenirs. So what you just said now and what you've suggested to me that we should do parallel to the more serious work we're doing on Mina podcast is to sort of think about those few stories that might interest people and make them smile without actually it being very sober, dry political analysis.
Brilliant. So you're saying yes then?
I didn't say yes. Did I use the word yes? No.
Oh, but don't get lawyerly on me. What do I expect from a lawyer? Honestly, I married one. I know what's going on. Right, we'll get out of the courtroom and into the coffee shop then.
We'll get out of the courtroom and we will go into the clerk's office.
Brilliant. Good. Well, let's do that in the new year. Have a very happy, peaceful and blessed Christmas, Harry. I hope you do. I wish the same, of course, to you, listeners. Yes, do have a wonderful time. Please spare a thought and a prayer for those that are suffering. Lebanon has many, many refugees, as, of course, does Turkey.
Jordan.
Yeah, we could go on and on. Please pray for the refugees. Please pray for all of those that are suffering, those that are suffering for their faith, those that are suffering. And that's not just Christians, incidentally. Please just simply pray for all those in the Middle East that are
suffering.
They're
not just Christians, incidentally. The majority are not Christians, James. That's what we have to remember. I mean, there are Christians there, but there are also non-Christians. And we as Christians, if we're going to take Jesus seriously, we should think of the Jew and the Pharisee, of the Christian and the non-Christian, in this case, the Muslims.
Well, let's do that. Harry, thank you for a great year of, well, ups, downs, sadness, positivity. I'm sure it'll be the same again next year. And have yourself a very good Christmas.
And to you too, to your family. And thanks once again, James, for your stewardship. It's fun to sit and have a chat. And this one was funnier than most.
Pleasure is certainly all mine. Now, listen, if you want to follow Dr. Harry Hagopian's musings over Christmas, you can on Twitter at Harry Hagopian. We're not going to talk about your Twitter. Just check it out.
I think by now some of our listeners have an idea that my tweets and my Twitter handle is as eccentric as I am sometimes.
Well, at least you can see that. That's very good. The Church, at Catholic EW on Twitter, /CBCEW on Facebook, facebook.com. And Catholic News is the home of these podcasts, Middle East Analysis, and we will be bringing you our more conversational stuff as well in the new year. So, yes, have a peaceful, holy and blessed Christmas from us all.